Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark. The California House. When I was in the fourth grade, my family moved into a house in Covina, California. On the outside, it looked like any other on the block, but on the inside, it was anything but normal. The layout of the upstairs had been changed by the previous owner and went from a four-bedroom to one large loft. But there was something else in the house that for the longest time, only us kids encountered. On the first day as we moved in, we watched a spice rack that was at the back of the counter. It slid across the tiled counter and over the lip at the end of it and crashed to the floor. Our parents did not believe us when we told them. They just thought one of us had done it ourselves. But as the weeks went by, things continued. The clock in the kitchen would periodically jump off the wall and land on the refrigerator 3 feet away. Never once did it hit the ground. The TV and stereo would turn on by themselves, tuned to a station with nothing but static. 3 to 4 times a week, we would hear scratching noises on the east side of the house, and there were no bushes or trees on that side. My little sister and I would every so often hear someone moving around in the upstairs closet when no one else was up there. My parents, however, thought this was just all our imagination. Until one night, my sister Kira and I, along with two other of my sisters, were up in her part of the loft one night, which was on the east side of the house, watching TV. We started to hear music from the music boxes on the other side of the loft where my other two sisters' beds were. They decided to go see what was going on, and as soon as they turned a corner by the stairs, that is when it happened. From outside Kira's window, a voice called out to her in a scratchy whisper. It called her name over and over again. Kira. Kira. By the time it called her name the third time, Kira, we were already heading down the stairs, followed by my other two sisters. They were running because as they got to the music boxes, it stopped playing. We ran to our dad, and after telling him what happened, he decided to go check it out. We followed him up the stairs to the window, all of us moving as one. But you could have heard a pin drop with the silence that followed him opening the curtains. On the window was two smeared handprints on the outside, and hanging from the beam of the roof was a noose. My dad thought someone had tried to break in and called the police. After they arrived and checked the house and the surrounding property, they found nothing. They told my dad that no one could have gotten to that side of the house from the outside. Only from the inside was it possible. That is when they informed my dad what had occurred at the house years before. It seemed that the owners, prior to the one we got the house from, had a teenage daughter. One day, when they had come home early, they discovered her body swinging from a noose from that very window. And on the outside of the window was two smeared handprints. That's all my dad needed to hear. We moved out that week, realizing that for some reason she was still there and did not want any other children in that house. From time to time, I go by that house in Covina and always get the feeling something is watching me. But to this day, when I hear something outside the window, I hesitate to look, in fear something maybe looking back. Cemetery. It was a cool but sunny October morning as I pulled my car in front of Chris's house. As I walked to his front door, I started to think about what happened a year before and how I thought I would not talk about it again. In October of 1987, my friends Chris and Michael experienced something that I hoped to never go through again. It started with a conversation about a deer. See, my friend Chris was always trying different things when it came to the spirit world. Yes, he was one of those who had a Ouija board, but he discovered another way to communicate with those who had passed away. It was called Waking the Dead. According to Chris, all we had to do is go to a cemetery at midnight and stand on the grave of someone who had been dead around a year. Then all we had to do was call the person's name 10 times, and if all was done correctly, the spirit would rise from the grave and speak to you. Now, of course, I told him no at first, and I should have stuck with that answer. But he knew if he was persistent enough and involved our other friend, Michael, that peer pressure would change my mind. And after being teased about being a coward, I caved in. Michael and Chris chose Forest Lawn Cemetery in Covina as the spot to go to. Earlier in the week, they went there a few times until they found three graves that fit the criteria and were near each other. The plans were set for that Friday night. First, we would meet at Michael's house because his parents were gone for the weekend. We actually just sat around for most of the night doing nothing until we left at 11:30 p.m. To add to the eeriness of the evening, a low fog had rolled in about 9 that night, but we went anyways. It only took us about 10 minutes to get there, and we parked across the street from the cemetery. The parking lot was empty, but the fog was so thick that we couldn't see that far in front of us. We crossed the street and jumped the wall without any problems. We then headed towards the area in which the three graves were. As we walked, the fog seemed to roll across the ground like some sort of horror movie, and all we could hear were the sounds of what must have been thousands of crickets. It only took us 5 minutes to find our way to the graves, which gave us 5 minutes to spare. Chris told us to choose a grave and stand beside it until he gave us the go-ahead to stand on top of them. With it being 1 minute to midnight, he instructed us to stand on the graves and wait until he counted down from 10. Then we needed to say the names of the people on the headstones 10 times and see what happened. So he counted down to 0 and we proceeded to say the names aloud. When he said the name the 8th time, every single cricket stopped chirping. We hesitated for a moment or two, but continued saying the name twice more. After about 20 seconds, nothing had happened, so I decided to step off the grave. That is when I heard Michael shout out, "Get the hell out of here!" I couldn't see him, but I could hear him start to run, and did finally see him as he passed in front of me. But what scared the hell out of me and made me run is what I saw or didn't see behind him. About 15 feet behind him, something was parting the fog, but I couldn't see it. As I ran, I started to hear someone running behind me. Thinking it was Chris, I stopped and turned, and that is when I was knocked down. As I stood up, I looked as I saw the fog part as if someone was running through it, but no one was there. As it turned towards me, I got going as fast as I could, zigzagging as I ran back to the wall. When I got over the wall, I was out of breath, but I wasn't the only one there. As I looked to my right, I saw Michael there, breathing as hard as I was. When I asked him if he was okay, he started to tell me why he ran. He said that after he finished saying the name the last time, something started to appear up through the fog, and it didn't seem safe to stay there. I told him about what I saw behind him with the fog and what had happened to me as I was running, and that is when we both realized that Chris was not back yet. We waited 5 minutes and decided to go back over and find him. We weren't sure if he was hurt or what, but we couldn't leave him there. While we walked, we called out Chris's name, just in case he had fallen and couldn't move. As we worked our way back to the graves, the fog started to thin out a little, and we could see a little further, and that is when we saw Chris. We could see him sitting on the grave he was standing on, but what scared us was a figure standing to his right. with its hand on his shoulder. We immediately screamed out to him and started to run towards him, at which time the figure just disappeared. When we got to Chris, he sat motionless, just staring forward. Michael started to reach for him when he suddenly stood up, but did not utter a word. That is when Michael and I decided it was best to get out of there. So we headed back to the wall and up and over, still with nothing being said by Chris. As we walked towards the car, the fog started to lift and the lights were brighter. And that is when we noticed Chris's eyes. They had no expression, just staring forward like two doll's eyes. We hurried into the car and headed back to Michael's house. About 5 minutes into the drive, Chris just started screaming out, "It wanted to take me! It wanted to take me!" And then back to silence. We finally arrived to Michael's house and went to the living room, all the while asking Chris who wanted to take him. But he did not respond. For the next few hours, we watched him, trying to get him to talk, until around 2:30 a.m., we just crashed on the couches. It wasn't until the morning that I woke to hear Chris and Michael talking in the kitchen. When I turned a corner, I was taken aback by how bad Chris looked. His eyes were dark and underneath as if he hadn't slept for days, and some of his hair had turned white. We sat there asking over and over what had happened, but he didn't seem to remember anything from the night before. Michael and I decided not to talk about what we experienced at the cemetery until Chris remembered something. A year had gone by and Chris never said a word. Whether he did or did not remember about that night, we never found out. See, like I said at the start, that this was something I thought I would never talk about again. But Michael and I could think about nothing else that day. See, the reason we went to Chris's house was because he died. It seems that he was driving his car with his girlfriend when he lost control and crashed into a light pole. She survived, but he was killed instantly. Ironically, it happened in front of that same cemetery in Covina and on the same date that we had gone to the cemetery exactly 1 year before. That is when Michael and I came to the conclusion that whatever he told us wanted to take him that night finally did get him a year later. Near the field. 1979, three people were murdered in a house near a dirt road in a small town in California. Two brothers and the older brother's wife were found dead within 2 weeks of each other. Their deaths were caused by their neck being broken by someone or something. The house was soon boarded up by their father, and two white dogs were left to guard the property from any nosy people. A year after the murders, my family moved into the area and us kids would ride our bikes in the fields near the house. Every time we got too close to the fence, the dogs would jump up and bark to scare us away. That is, until one day. When we got there, the dogs just sat there looking up at a window where we saw three people standing there watching us. We took off immediately, but later were brought back by the police. Thinking we may have done something there, they contacted the father to open the house. We explained to them what we saw, but after entering the house, they told us that no one had been in there. The owner told us that it was impossible that we had seen the dogs, due to the fact that they had died 2 weeks before. That is when we realized that not only did we see the ghost of the three murdered people, but also of the dogs. The house was never sold and eventually torn down. But to this day, it remains an empty lot because no one wants to build on that site. It is believed that whatever killed them still lingers and perhaps still awaits more victims. The Man in White. In 1991, I was living in Cleveland, Ohio, and was working at TGI Fridays, located on the west side of the flats. It was the first day of snowfall for that year, and I was working late as usual. After closing, I made it to my car. Since there was so much snow, I had to start my car and wait for it to warm up. As I sat there, listening to my music, I noticed someone standing in front of my car. When I turned on the headlights, I realized that it was some guy wearing a white coat. He was just standing there, staring out at the water. At first, I thought it was someone who I may have worked with, so I rolled down my window and shouted out to him, but he did not respond. I then honked the horn, but still got no response. The snow started to come down really heavy, and it covered the front windshield pretty quickly. After a few moments, I turned on the wipers, and to my surprise, he was gone. I stepped out of the car to see where he went, but he was nowhere to be seen. I quickly got back into the car and went home. The next day, I went to work, still wondering who the guy may have been. As a matter of fact, when I got inside, I started talking to a couple of the waiters about what had happened, and I was taken aback by the look on their faces. When I asked them why they looked so shocked by what I told them, they in turn told me about what happened 2 years before. It was the first day of snowfall in 1989 when a young man was seen standing on top of the unfinished bridge that went over the river. Many people watched in horror as he jumped into the river. The witnesses to this said that he was dressed all in white. The body, however, was never recovered, and his ID was found at the top of the bridge where he had jumped off. It was only after they discovered who he was that they realized why he had killed himself. It seems that a week before, his fiancée had died in a car crash, and his family told authorities that he was depressed over it. The following year, several people leaving a bar one night said they had seen something very similar to what I had seen. Oddly enough, it was also on the first day of snowfall in 1990. That is when I realized that I had seen his ghost, still lost and perhaps looking for his love. In any case, it was something that I will never forget, and I hope that someday he finds what he is looking for.